Investing Simplified is brought to you by Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated, a registered investment advisor firm with Bo Caldwell, CFP, and Chuck Price, founder and author of Investing Simplified, the book, and the number one bestseller, Your Retirement Made Simple. Chuck Price has been doing estate planning since 1970 and investing in retirement planning since 1975. Individual situations will vary, and the information on this show should only be relied upon when coordinated with individual professional advice. Other parties present on this broadcast are not affiliated with Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated. Investing Simplified is the longest-running live financial show in America with a financial advisor and now a CFP, an estate planning attorney, and a CPA to answer your questions for free, and comes to you live from Portland, Oregon on affiliated stations throughout the Pacific Northwest. You can contact Bo or Chuck by visiting pfgwm.com. Or you can email them with a question at ask@pfgwm.com. Or you can call them right now at 503-417-9595. That's 503-417-9595. And for our long distance and podcast listeners, you can call toll free at 877-733-1011. That's 877-733-1011. Now, here's the host of Investing Simplified, Bo Caldwell.
Welcome into Investing Simplified. However you're tuning in today, thank you for making us a part of your day. A little update, as we've been doing for the last few weeks, we have a new phone number, and that's 503-222-9700. If you'd like to get a hold of us with that question that's been keeping you up at night, as Chuck has been wont to say over the years, there is never a stupid or dumb question. It's never a bad question when it comes to your finances, when it comes to your taxes, when it comes to your estate planning. In studio with me today is Kevin Stege of Baker Colson CPA firm. Hello, Kevin.
Hello, Bo.
So, Kevin, you know, as we get into the, I guess it's the impending tax season, and as you prepare to go back into tax animal hibernation to prepare those taxes. But then they go prepare, right?
That's right.
That makes sense. But do you have any words of wisdom tax-wise, some stuff that you've seen come down the pipeline this particular year with anything people should keep an eye out for as they get ready to send their taxes to their CPA?
I've got a bunch of things, but probably the main one that's jumping out right now is we're getting a lot of calls on the new W-4.
Mm-hmm.
They revised the whole form that you fill out with your employer so that you have the proper withholding. You know, they adjusted the tables, they tweaked people's withholdings, they did all sorts of stuff, and you know, where people thought they owed taxes, and so that at the end of the year when they didn't, and so they thought, Well, the tax law changes didn't help me, when in fact their liability went down.
Right.
But this whole new W-4 thing is it's a step in the right direction, but it's a little mixed bag too, because you're basically preparing a little mini tax return to figure out what your withholding should be. And there's online tools now at the IRS to do all that type of stuff, but the exemptions and the single, married, all that stuff, you don't have to go down that road anymore.
Oh, but, interesting. Yeah. Is that just because I know they had a new W-4 for Oregon, but does that have to do with that too? Because the separate W-4 for Oregon, or
yes, IRS has developed their whole new whole new calculation and form.
And so are we still going to have to do two different ones because Oregon has their own one and the IRS, or with this update, is it now going to be?
That's a good question. I think a lot of times right now, if you don't do anything, what you have on file will stick with your employer. But I think if you do a new IRS form, maybe Oregon has their own form, or, you know, IRS might go with it.
Sure.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, no worries. Yeah. Interesting, just wondering about. And, you know, as we end the year as well with, you know, talking about taxes, we're ending the decade, actually, which is kind of crazy, right? So this is the end of a decade, and kind of what you can say with the market, what a decade it's been, right? So it continued to set all-time highs, other than yesterday we had a slight pullback in the NASDAQ, and the S&P was flat, and the Dow was only up, you know, 0.04%, so people were sort of upset about that, I suppose. I don't know. You know, it keeps setting all-time highs in the market. And
any drop that happens in a day, the favorable way to say is it was a profit-taking, right?
Right. A day to take profit. Yes. Yeah. Which is a good point, you know, to bring up. If you've been in the market over the last, you know, decade or so, and if you've been doing, you know, listening to our show, listening to what we say, that you got to, you know, time in the market and you're owning stocks because there is, you know, stocks are the best way to combat inflation, you may have significant capital gains, significant gains that you have built in there, but you actually haven't made any money until you sell. That's the hard thing to remember with market investments, with stocks. If you've invested in Microsoft, in Apple, in Google, in Facebook, in Netflix over the last 10 years, you've probably done really, really well. And Amazon particularly keeps going up, you know, like 2% a day. It's crazy. But if you've been invested in those stocks and you've held on to them for a long time, for the last, you know, 10 or 12 years, you've probably done really, really well in those stocks. But the thing about it is, if you have not sold, if you have not realized those gains, if you have not divested of those stocks, you really haven't made any money, right? It's just on paper, because tomorrow the market could, it could be October of 87 again. We could have a 25% one-day movement in the market. Now, I don't think that's going to happen. When I took over Chuck's practice, I inherited his crystal ball. It doesn't work for me any better than it worked for him. I thought it might, but it doesn't work any better. And so I don't know what's going to happen in the market in the coming months, year necessarily. All the economists that I follow, the folks that I talk to that are watching the trends, that do the deep math, they're much smarter than I. They agree with Chuck's crystal ball prediction for 2020, and that we should have, you know, low double-digit returns next year as well. So something in the 9 to 12% range in the S&P is the prediction that happens. But what the big thing that we see coming is volatility will continue to rise. So we've had pretty low volatility over the last couple of months, and it's been basically just straight up. We had some volatility back in the summer, and we had some earlier in the year, even with this great uptick in the market. But when that volatility comes, then you end up having things that happened like last December, where the market spiked downward, and then it spiked downward enough that all the algorithms and all the computers that are doing these big trades and these big block trades, they kicked in. And so that shot it down even farther. And we had a pretty rapid drop between October and December of last year in the market. You know, the maximum, you know, downdraw in the S&P 500 actually hit 20%. We had a bear market, technically, is what they call it, when they touched it, because it touched down 20% from the all-time high. So if you were in that situation and you panicked and sold, then you missed out on a big-time upswing. Or if you were holding on, then you went down and had to ride it all the way down to ride it all the way back up. But now may be a time to look at just taking some of those gains, not getting greedy. It might be a good time to shave off some of those all-time highs. If you've been in the market, think about moving that money to something maybe a little bit safer, moving that money to something a little more stable. But the big thing is rebalancing to your target allocation. So if your target allocation is 60-40, which is a pretty traditional, if you're using one of those online brokerage companies, you know, the Wealthfronts, the Betterments, the robo-advisors, as they call it, and they set you up in an ETF portfolio for super low cost, and they have you in a target allocation, then you might be a little bit over-allocated to stocks right now. If you were 60% stocks, 40% bonds as your target allocation, then the stocks have gone up significantly. I mean, the S&P 500 is up 30% for the year, a little over 30% year-to-date. So if you went up 30% on one side and stayed basically flat, if down a little bit on the other side, now your allocation might be closer to 70-30 or 75-25. And if you're supposed to be a 60-40, when the market does correct, which it will at some point between now and the end of time, when it does correct, you may be over-allocated to those stocks. Now, the alternative, you know, people say, well, pushback is, well, what if I'm thinking the market's going to keep going up, which I think it does. They say, Bo, you just said you thought that the market would continue to go up over time, and I do think it's going to do that. But I don't want you to be taking more risk than you're comfortable with, than your portfolio is set up for, than your strategy is set up for. If you'd like to review that strategy, if you haven't had anybody take a look at that, and you want to just have an disinterested third party, I shouldn't say disinterested, because I'm interested in helping everyone do better, but a free professional second opinion. The only cost to you is about an hour of your time to sit down with me at the office and go over that portfolio and tell you where you're at, make sure that your risk is in line with what you're actually thinking it is. Give my office a call, 503-253-3000, and we'd be happy to go over that for you. We can do that portfolio analysis. We can give you a draft financial plan, give you an idea of where you're going, make sure you're on track. And then the worst thing is, like I said, is that you took the time to have someone tell you that you're doing a good job.
Well, you know, Bo, you said something there that leads me to think that there's a competitive advantage out there for the big boys or some people that are probably invested with you. You know, when my selling algorithm kicks in is basically when I look at my computer during the day and it's just like, oh, shoot, the Dow's down 700 points, you know.
Right.
A little too late for that to kick in. Mm. But, you know, somebody invested it at the, you know, in the higher end side of things. And I know you guys deal in managed funds and stuff like that. That's a pretty significant advantage to have, I think.
It absolutely can be. You know, we're not going to necessarily, you know, beat the market all the time. The goal is not necessarily to beat what the market's doing for folks, but it's to make sure that they don't ever run out of money, right? That's the tagline I like to use is we're not going to make you rich. We make sure you don't run out of money. And like you said, we get to deal. You know, the great thing is we can, you know, bring that sort of Wall Street big money opportunities. Normally you'd need $5 to $10 million just to invest in, but by working with an advisor, you get an advantage of getting access to those type of funds, those institutional funds or institutional managers that normally work with, you know, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, or they work with UW's, you know, endowment fund. They're working in the, you know, billions of dollars. And so when those of us who don't have billions, I don't know if you have billions that you've hidden away somewhere, but I certainly don't.
Not that I know of.
Not that you know of, which is where you've got an uncle somewhere that's about right. to pass away, and you'll get an email from a Nigerian prince who says he has money for you that you've inherited.
That's right.
But barring you know, the Powerball ticket that I have in my pocket being the winner, you know, in tonight's drawing, which it probably won't be, but barring that sort of situation, then you need to utilize those opportunities with an advisor to get access to that type of management, that type of fund. And the big thing that we stress about that is it's not that we're setting the world, we're not shooting the lights out performance-wise, we're not trying to set the world on fire, we're trying to take the risk that you need. Because that's the one thing we can control, right? I can't control what the market does. I can't control what the president does. I can't control what Congress does to the president. All I can control is how much risk we take in a client portfolio. And the big thing is doing that analysis to find out where your risk level is. Because, you know, if you're a roller coaster rider and you love the Matterhorn and your portfolio is Mr. Toad's Wild Ride, you're not going to have a good time. And the opposite is true too. I have folks that come in all the time, and I can't tell you, they say, I'm a conservative investor. We take a questionnaire where they analyze, see, this is how I'd feel if my portfolio moved this much. And they come back and say, hey, I'm a 4 out of 10 in terms of risk, and their portfolio is a 7.5 or an 8 out of 10. And they don't know, because they think that they're in a conservative investment. Their advisor possibly has told them they're in a conservative investment, or they're picking and choosing in their 401k because you don't know. And if you don't know, that can really hurt you. So the worst case is you have that analysis done. We do, you know, we utilize software. I'd love to say it's my brain and I'm just the smartest guy out there, but we utilize, you know, proprietary planning software. We utilize a process that is proprietary to us to make sure that you're going the direction you want to go at the speed you want to go. Because that's the biggest thing, is you can't control what happens in the market. We can't control when those algorithms start selling. And if, like Kevin, your algorithm may be a little behind, it might behoove you to work with an advisor. So like I said, give us a call, 503-253-3000, if you'd like to set that up and sit down. We're going to take a quick break here, and we'll be right back with Investing Simplified. If you're just now tuning in, we're talking year-end planning. We're talking finances. But we love your phone calls. If you have a question that's been keeping you up at night, invariably someone else has that question too. So give us a call, 503-222-9700. That's 503-222-9700. We'll be right back with Investing Simplified.
Are you concerned about your retirement income? Do you really understand how your Social Security benefits work? Price Financial Group Wealth Management has helped many seniors in Oregon and Washington maximize their Social Security benefits at retirement through using their Social Security seminar on demand. Now you can watch this valuable information in the comfort of your home by just going to www.pfgwm.com and click on the free Social Security kit. If you are serious about your retirement planning, you cannot afford to miss this opportunity. After all, you have invested your hard-earned dollars into Social Security all your working years. So shouldn't you get the maximum return you can get from those dollars? The future can be scary, and without a plan, it can be even scarier, especially when facing the unknown. What you don't know can hurt you. Get your free Social Security kit at pfgwm.com or call 503-253-3000.
You're listening to Investing Simplified. Now, back to Bo Caldwell.
Thanks for tuning into Investing Simplified. If you're just now joining us, we've been talking some year-end gain planning, some decade-end planning, looking at your portfolio and analyzing whether or not you can take some of those gains and decide not to be greedy. I found in my experience, and it happens to me personally as well, it's a human nature thing. When you're making some money in the market and you've got some investments that have done really, really well, and instead of saying, hey, I'm up 4 or 5 times my initial investment, maybe I should take some money off the table. It's like, you know, you get that rush just like you do at the craps table at Vegas. Instead of hiding some money in your pocket that you can't lose, eventually it's going to go down. So you want to make sure that you can be the house rather than the gambler showing up at the house. So if you have questions about that, give us a call. If you have a question that's been keeping you up at night about your financial planning, about your investments, about your tax planning, about your estate planning, give us a call, 503-222-9700. So, Kevin, I wanted to talk a little bit about, you know, we call it orphan 401ks, is, you know, in our industry. And that's where people, because anymore, it used to be, you know, the older generations used to, you'd get one job, maybe a couple jobs when you were a kid, but one career job that you work at for 20, 30, 40 years, and you retire from there. You've got a lot of folks here in the area that worked at Boeing for 30 years, 35 years, and they get a real good pension. They've got set up. They were saving in the savings plan. They have one 401k. They don't have any orphaned 401ks, as we call them. But anymore, folks start working at a job, and especially when you're young, and you just get a job maybe while you're in college, when you're out of college, when you're just out of high school, one of those things, the first couple of jobs that you work, they may have a retirement plan, and they may have a profit-sharing plan where you're not even participating that you know of. Right. So you're not putting money in actively. They're putting in a profit sharing portion for you. Or maybe you started because, you know, your CPA said, hey, make sure you enroll in this and get your free money. And then you put a couple thousand, 5,000, 10,000 in there over the first couple years you worked there. And then you moved on to another company and forgot about it. And so it's been there and it's been invested in the market. And the market over the last decade has done gangbusters. And so maybe you've got $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 in there that you didn't know about. And it's subsidizing the plan at your old employer. And, you know, the question is, what do you mean it's subsidizing? Because there are fees inside of a 401k, right? It costs money to run a 401k. It costs money to invest money. It costs money to make money usually, right? And inside that 401k, there are several different fees that you don't see except if you actually dig into the plan documents. They provide that to you. Who reads it? You know, it's the 14-page document that you got when you enrolled in that 401k and that 401k advisor slid that over to you and said, hey, here's the disclosures of all the fees and all the costs in there. And a lot of times employers subsidize the cost of that plan by passing that along to the participants. And that's totally fine because, you know, you're subsidizing a plan, you're getting a benefit, and there are fees in there. But that could be really driving down your returns in the 401k. And if you have multiple different 401ks, you're not even monitoring that. What kind of benefit are you really getting by having it there? And there's a thing, if you are in this position where you have an old 401k, where you've retired from your business with a 401k, that IRS has put out a notice. It's called the Special Tax Notice. And it outlays your options when you've terminated, separated from service, and you have an old 401k. So it outlays the tax benefits and the tax implications, is a better way to say it, the tax implications of any choices that you make. So with an old 401k, it boils down to basically you have, I guess I should count them as we go rather than saying how many choices it is. But, you know, it boils down to you can leave it there. That's choice number one, right? Leave it there, do nothing. It's not really hurting you other than you're subsidizing that old, you know, that old plan. And I have had folks that I talk to say, oh, I hate those guys over there. I don't want to have my money with them. So if that's the case and you had a bad experience at the job, but, you know, you can leave it there, but you're subsidizing the plan. You can roll it to your new plan. You can do a direct rollover to the plan where you're at now. If you're working at another job and you have a 401k there, it makes a lot of sense to consolidate, especially as we get older. It makes a lot of sense to have fewer logins, to have fewer passwords you have to remember, to have fewer places you have to know to go get where your money is. So you can roll it into your new plan as long as your new plan accepts rollovers. Not all of them do. Most of them do anymore. you can roll over to your plan. There's no tax implication on that because you're doing a direct rollover, right? There's no it doesn't hurt you. It doesn't cost you any money tax-wise. It stays tax-deferred, or if you've done the Roth portion, it stays Roth as long as it goes into the new 401k. You can take a distribution and take it paid out to you in a lump sum. Here, take my money. Now, if you're under 59 and a half, that's a real problem. You get a 10% tax penalty. The IRS is coming. Your CPA, you're going to come see Kevin and turn in your taxes, and he's going to take out his, you know, his Catholic ruler with the yardstick and smack your knuckles, right? It's going to be Sister Kevin, right? He's going to smack your knuckles and say, hey, you shouldn't have done that. We just cost yourself 10%. You also have to pay taxes on that distribution, right? If you're over 59 and a half, you can take it, and there's no 10% penalty, but it will be a taxable distribution. You can also roll it, and a lot of people don't realize this, you can roll it to an IRA. And that IRA is managed, you know, people call it self-directed, you know, you get to manage it yourself, and there's still, it retains tax deferment, it has that tax deferred wrapper, and the big thing is you have a lot more options, because in the 401k, you're stuck with whatever options they have inside of that plan. If you roll it to an IRA, the negatives are it may cost you something if you work with an advisor, if you work with a brokerage house, if you work at Charles Schwab and they have trading costs, any of that stuff is going to be a little different. It's different than the 401k. It does have different rules in terms of when you can take it out early too, right? Kevin, there's some rules in a 401k. If you've separated service and you're under 59 and a half, you can actually take it out sometimes at age 55.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
With an IRA, you have to wait till 59 and a half. So it does limit you a little bit there, but it lets you do some tax planning options like Roth conversions that we've been talking about. It lets you do planning about gifting to, you know, your qualified charity. It gives you a lot of different options if you do the rollout. So I guess that's what, 1, 2, 3, 4 options basically, right? So those are your four big options. You can also directly convert it to a Roth. So they give you that option when you roll it out of the plan is roll it into a Roth. You can roll it right there, but immediately the balance of your 401k becomes taxable because you're doing a conversion effectively from your 401k to your Roth. Now, the big thing that's kind of funny in there, and it's interesting to me, and it may not be interesting to you guys, but is if you have a simple IRA at your new work, which is an employer-sponsored plan, you actually can't roll the money from your 401k into that new plan at work because simple's, for some reason, the IRS is real weird about simple IRAs. And so that may be a factor for you. So if you've got old 401ks, if you've got a situation like that where you haven't really analyzed that, you want to have somebody take a look, like I said before with your portfolio, we're happy to take a look at that. And I'll tell you those same four options I just told you, or five, I guess, with the rolling to the Roth that we just talked about on the radio. That's what I tell people when they sit down with me. Here are your options. Okay, here's the ramifications. So you get some, take that gray area and make it black and white so you can make a decision that's best for you and your family. If you'd like to do that, you can pop me an email at bo@pfgwm.com or give our office a call, 503-253-3000. So it's one of those things that just you come across and people don't realize. When we do that financial plan for people, we ask them where, you know, what do you have? Where's your money over here? And they say, oh, I have this over at my old job, or maybe I should check. And, you know, that I did have one client that said, hey, you found me $40,000. And I said, no, I didn't. No, you had it. We just helped you. So I didn't add that 40 grand to your life. But a lot of times people don't realize they have them. And I, you know, the worst case scenario for me is that you haven't updated a beneficiary on there, that you haven't added a beneficiary, that it gets, or that it's a small enough amount that it gets escheated to the state. And I'd hate to hear that, right? I'd hate to hear that you had money that could have gone to your heirs, could have been used for your retirement, or could have been used for, you know, any various and sundry purposes, and the state got to choose where it goes. I mean, I feel like that's a big bad word for us here, is when the state gets to decide or when the IRS gets to decide. We want to make sure that you're making those decisions. So if you've got that old 401k, check it out, log on there, call your plan, and make sure that you haven't, you know, been participating in something that you didn't want to, that you didn't know about.
Sister Kevin?
Sorry. You've been ruminating on that. You didn't listen at all. You listened to nothing I said other than I just called you. Well, it's about the ruler thing. I don't know.
It worked.
I was vamping.
Just fine. I prefer your eminence or something like that.
Right. Sorry. Yeah. My bad. It's the Catholic school roots coming.
Yeah. No, very good stuff there. And, you know, actually, 401ks and IRAs do have different set of rules for that 10% penalty, as you alluded to. And I will not delve into the legal side of things,
right,
But I understand from our attorney friends that there are different creditor protections depending on maybe bankruptcy or that type of a thing between those two, and I wouldn't even venture in. I have an idea, but I'm not going there. So
yeah, well, that's all. If you just Google the special tax notice, it include the IRS publication includes those, right? So that's, you'll actually be required to read that before you can process a rollover out of the 401k or your 457 plan or your 403b or your TSP if you're working for the federal government. They actually require that you've been provided that and look over it, and you don't actually have to read it. You have to say you read it, but it behooves you to take a look at it. It's just a couple pages. It's not super dense, but it has those different creditor protections and things like that as well.
Yeah, yeah. I've had some clients that have had these orphan 401ks, and actually one of them kept it where he wanted it because he felt it diversified his positions, and he had enough in his other spots that he liked how they at the old place how they were managing it and returns, and so he and if he took it out, obviously he couldn't get it back in, and it was a big company that managed it well or something. And so I mean,
but, that's why I said that's option one, right? Is leave it where it is, especially if you like the things that they got going on. And you said a word in there, gave them better diversification, and my only pushback on that is you can get all the funds just about that you can get inside of a 401k, you can get inside of an IRA, and having diversified, because I hear that from folks too, they say they want to have it diversified at multiple different, you know, brokerages or multiple different advisors, and that, if you're talking about diversification of ideas, absolutely, but if that, they should be able to get the same options, and then what you really run the risk of is being one of two things, either over-diversified where you're spread too thin and you're really not, you know, you've got basically, it's basically, you go to the, I'll use the gambling analogy again, you go to the craps table and you're betting on red and black. So really, are you going to win?
Yeah.
Right? And what if it hits green? You know what? So that having this, the diversified of different places may or may not make sense if you're talking about actual investments. But the other thing is you really run the risk of being super under-diversified, right? So you've got these multiple different 401ks or these multiple different advisors that you're working with. And if they're not aware of what's going on in your other plan or in your other investments, or if they're not coordinating, then you really run the risk of having all your eggs in one basket, even though you think they're diversified because they're at different spots. But that doesn't mean that it's a bad idea to leave it there.
Yep.
Like you said, if he likes the management and if he likes the performance and the fund options that are in there, and if he's, if he can keep track of where everything is, then absolutely. Yeah. That's why it's option one, right?
Yeah. I'm always a fan of simplification and consolidating accounts if you can, having just, you know, multiple statements and multiple accounts does tend to wear on you a bit.
Wear on you, or, you know, we've dealt with that with cases where we have clients that pass away and have, you have 15 different, especially in the case of a, you know, a spouse, where a husband and a wife, and where one of the, where either the husband or the wife has been the primary, you know, money manager, right? Mm-hmm. One or the other, and the primary money manager passes away. Now the spouse has some idea of where stuff is, but then they have to gather all that stuff when they meet with the estate attorney and meet with the CPA to get everything finalized. And if you've got 15, 20 different statements, it can be overwhelming at that time when it's just a grief-stricken time, right? Where you're dealing with the loss of your spouse, and now I have to go find out where she had all these various and sundry items, right?
Yep.
So it can make sense to have it consolidated, or at least have, make it simplified for, you know, just your beneficiaries or your survivors.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's just our little piece of wisdom, right? Take it, you know, take it with a grain of salt. So we're going to take our next break here, and we'll be back with the tax investigator. If you have a question for Kevin, if you have a question for me, give us a call, 503-222-9700. You're listening to Investing Simplified.
Legal matters are never easy, but they are especially difficult when they involve the most important people and aspects of your life. This is Taylor Cattell, founding partner of KG Law Group. It's important to have an attorney who cares about your unique circumstances and knows how to get the outcome that is best for you. At KG Law Group, we specialize in estate planning and family law, including wills, trusts, powers of attorney, guardianship, and divorce. At KG Law Group, we provide both expertise and compassion as we guide you through the complex legal landscape. We balance knowledge of the law with exemplary client service. Whether you're reacting to a crisis or planning for the future, we are here to help. If you need legal advice, give us a call today and schedule a consultation at 503-878-8948. That's 878-8948. Or visit us online at kglawgroup.com. That's kglawgroup.com, serving Oregon and Southwest Washington. KG Law Group, your family, your legacy.
Here's your opportunity to ask Kevin Stege, CPA and shareholder of the Baker Colson CPA firm, that tax question that's been keeping you up at night. You can call Kevin, 503-417-9595, or toll free at 877-733-1011. Now, here's the CPA with the tax answers, Kevin Stege.
Welcome back to Investing Simplified, and the phones are eerily quiet on this this weekend,
but weekend.
Exactly, 503-222-9700 or 800-344-5836. Those are the numbers. Give us a call. We'll take your call and hopefully answer your questions. So I thought I would follow up on our continuing conversation before I move into the tax investigator segment, and just a few of the options that are available for escaping that 10% penalty. So maybe you've got some funds, funds in an IRA or a 401k, and you have a need, and you're thinking, hey, maybe I need a distribution. Is there an out for me? And they're adding a few more here and there that make sense. But it's a pretty narrow window. You really have to fit the circumstances. You know, the when there was this you know, the housing downturn, number of hard decisions had to be made by people to, hey, do I liquidate my 401k or do I take a distribution to save my house? You know, when the downturn happened and maybe you're having to move and you're underwater, or so on and so forth. And that was just a double-edged sword.
Right.
It was just bad. There was no
Right answer.
Yeah, for when you pulled that money out, you know, you're short on cash. You can't make your payment. And now you're taking your 401k and the tax hit, income taxes, plus the 10% penalty was pretty rough.
Sure.
One of the distributions that can be made that will skirt the 10% penalty, and of course this is in a rough time of life, but if your medical expenses exceed the 7.5% threshold for itemizing, anything above that 7.5%, it's kind of an interesting calculation. You don't get anything for the first 7.5, but if you have deductible medical, that's one thing you can pull out of to cover those costs. So that helps. And it doesn't have to be the exact same dollars, like you pull them out and you give them to the hospital. It's kind of a calculation you do at the end of the year. Another one that's interesting, and this one makes sense, is any distribution from your 401k that is in relation to a qualified domestic relations order,
quadro.
And anytime you're in the quadros, you know life's throwing you a rough curve and you're in a divorce. And so any distribution made to settle a divorce, at least, would escape that 10% penalty. But anyway, there's a number of other ones, and but they're, again, very, very specific active duty folks, things like that, so that might affect you. 503-222-9700, 800-344-5836. And today on the Tax Investigator, I thought I'd go through just a few more of the tax provisions in the new government spending bill, or some of the changes that are just coming up. One was the W-4. That wasn't particular to the new legislation, but that's just a new plant on the landscape to admire as you're doing your tax prep and planning. The tax forms are going to be changing again. The first run of the new revised forms met with some blowback from the tax preparer community and taxpayers in general. Not so easy to interpret at first glance. I know some of it was just gaining familiarity, but in general, they are getting rid of schedules 4, 5, and 6. There was 1 through 6, and now they're combining them all on just schedules 1, 2, and 3, which is basically the additional stuff out of basic tax returns. This would be more like business income, other taxes, other credits, those types of things. So they'll combine those things. There is a new form for seniors, the 1040 SR.
Interesting.
Yes, or maybe they should have called it the 1040 Boomer,
right.
So the millennials would know what's
right.
happening.
Right.
But that's supposedly a fairly simplified form that would mainly entail Social Security and retirement income.
Sure.
And make it, I'm assuming, the standard deduction to help keep things.
Right, the people that maybe don't have a whole lot of moving parts, they've got something simple. They've got Social Security, Medicare, medical costs, and maybe their mortgage if they haven't had a chance to pay it off before retirement.
That's
that
makes
sense. That'd be nice to cut down on that. I know that's a burden for seniors as you're aging. And then if you don't have a complex enough situation that you need, complex tax planning, it'd be nice if they could do.
That's right.
Simplifying something. I know that was the big goal of a lot of the questions. So we've got a caller on line. Rob has an RMD from the 529 question. Hello, Rob.
Well, actually, it's two questions.
Oh, sure.
RMDs, we have to start taking it this year. Does it have to be characterized as an RMD? We've been taking distributions for 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
But do we have to characterize that as a RMD or just as long as we have the distribution?
Yeah, that's a really good question, Rob. You don't have to check any box. The RMD is the minimum you have to take. So as long as you're exceeding that minimum, it doesn't matter what you if you take it out during, monthly, or if you take it out once a year, there's just a minimum amount you have to remove from there to hit that required minimum distribution. And as long as you hit that minimum, then you've satisfied the RMD. There's no RMD characterization. And in fact, there's not a necessarily, and Kevin, you can correct me if I'm wrong, I don't believe there's anything where you put it on your tax return that it was a required minimum. They just, because what they do when the brokerage house or whoever custodian has your funds, they send the 5498 to the IRS and say, they do that in about May, and this is how much money you had in that account, and this is how much you contributed to that account, and the IRS looks at that plus your 1099 that will come when you take distributions that says, hey, we took the distribution and match it up. So as long as you are exceeding what you have to take, then you'll be fine.
Right. Okay. That sounds great. Another question that's been bothering me lately. Mm-hmm. I have 6 grandkids, and we started 529s when they were 1 year old. And at that time, people said, I can't remember, Clark Howard, one of them, mm-hmm. it's better to have it in your grandparents' name as opposed to your parents'. Now I keep hearing that, to qualify for financial aid, it should be in the parents' name.
So as far as I know, and this is, so take this with a certain grain of salt, from my understanding, your first assertion was right. So the financial aid, when they file the FAFSA, the free application for student, I think it's free application for student aid, they have a number that they calculate called the EFC, or the expected family contribution. So that's the amount that based on the parents of the child applying for aid that they could contribute based on their income and their savings. And then based on where it really hurts you is if it's in the kid's name, in terms of if the child has the money that you've saved up in their name, then that's 100% available for the expected family contribution. I don't remember what the calculation number is for the parents, but I think it's something like 50% of their assets. They consider that. If it's a grandparent, they don't consider it at all. So if you are the owner of that 529 plan, even though the child is the beneficiary, my understanding is that they, when they look at the expected family contribution, they don't look at that money at all. Because technically in a 529 plan, Rob, you can change the beneficiary, and you can go either up and down the family tree in terms of you could change the beneficiary to the child's parent or to yourself. Hypothetically, you can also go sideways, so change it to one of their cousins, another grandchild that you have. So the way that they look at it, my understanding is, because it's not technically promised to the child and isn't in their name, it doesn't become part of their expected family contribution. So if you're the owner of it, then that's actually better for them to get the financial aid.
Yeah, well, actually, my wife is.
Oh, sure.
She doesn't trust me, so.
Well, that's that. I think that's called marriage, right?
Oh, exactly. 50 years worth.
Right. So. Well, congratulations on that. Yeah, so no, you've done, from my understanding, you've done the right thing in having it in your name rather than the parents' name.
Sounds perfect. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you, Rob. Good question. We also have Jim on the line who's got a question about the medical deduction you were just talking about. Kevin, hello, Jim.
Hey, Jim. How's it going?
It's going.
I'm wondering about the 7.5%. Do you have to be able to itemize on the federal return in order to take advantage of that?
The direct 7.5% deduction, yes. That's just one of the components of your itemized deductions.
Okay. Yeah, well, obviously, with the new, $24,000 for a married couple, there's no way I'm going to hit that, even though I'm above the 7.5% for the medical deduction. So, too bad on that one. Does the state have any type of deduction for medical expenses?
Yes, and I was just going to say, you'll still have to cobble all your medical together probably for the state return because they're going to use the federal itemized deduction schedule, but just have a significantly lower standard deduction, somewhere around, $5,000 or $6,000, something like that.
For the state you're talking about.
Yeah, so more than likely with property taxes, donations, mortgage interest, and some medical, you're going to exceed that, and you'll want to do all the same work for your federal deductions. You'll just apply it to Oregon only.
Okay, so on the medical deductions, that take into account premiums paid?
Yes.
Okay, because I pay a buttload. I'm retired, and I take a buttload in premiums for my medical deduction. I'm not eligible for Medicare yet.
Okay. So out of pocket premiums and other costs. Absolutely, that's part of the cost, and that can be significant. I mean, especially if you got a spouse, and maybe you have a child under 26 that's still covered by your insurance. I mean, you could be paying thousands,
buku bucks.
Yeah.
Nope. I kind of lost it last year because I didn't do it last year because I didn't itemize with the feds, so I didn't think I could itemize with the state. But I did itemize with the state because I did it through TurboTax because we're pretty much simple taxes.
Excellent.
And did it with TurboTax. And I said, "Yep, you can itemize it." So I did okay with the state, but this year, and I didn't do the medical deduction for the state last year. So, I just lost out on that, but I'll do it this year and it seems like I'll be in pretty good shape.
Yes, that's right. Sounds good. And there's one other benefit on the Oregon return for medical, and that's the Oregon special medical subtraction. Regardless of whether you itemize or not, if you're over the age of it used to be 60, and I'm just checking that. For some reason, it sticks in my mind. It might be 63 now. But there is up to, and it's limited by income, but there is a special medical subtraction whether or not you itemize or not. So if you're taking standard federal, even taking standard Oregon, anybody that has up to, it's about $1,800 maximum per taxpayer, another $1,800 for the spouse, that can be an additional subtraction separate from itemizing.
Great. Hey, thank you very much for your time. Enjoy the show.
No, thank you. Thank you, Jim. That's a really good question. Because the itemizing, that's changed in the last with the tax law and things. So to know that you can do it in Oregon still is good to know.
That's right. And it's age 63.
Age 63.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
So if you're out there, if you're over age 63, you have these medical, have medical costs, like Kevin said, but you're not itemizing your deductions because even with the state of Oregon, you have less than, this $5,000 or $6,000 in deductions, you're just taking the standard, you still get a subtraction of up to $1,800 per taxpayer. So that's a good thing to note.
Yep.
So we're going to take our last break here, and then we'll be back with a more Investing Simplified finish up talking about some taxes. We've got a couple questions that came in via text, and we'll cover those as well. But if you have a question like Jim or like Rob, those are really great questions, things that we aren't necessarily covering, but we're talking about, give us a call, 503-222-9700. We'll be right back with Investing Simplified.
Hello, this is Kevin Stege, shareholder with Baker & Colson Certified Public Accountants, serving the Portland and Southwest Washington areas for almost 40 years. We are a full-service accounting and consulting firm offering our services to a wide range of business and individual clients. One of the largest expenses to a household or a business is its tax burden. While off-the-shelf tax products can help file simple returns, they can't know your plans for the future and not only provide insight and planning to help you get there, but actually help you along the way. There are just some things that can't be replaced by experience. Whether you are just beginning your working career or have a well-established business with many employees, rely on the professionals at Baker & Coulson to help in an efficient, accurate, and personalized manner. We are located at 2414 Northeast Division in Gresham and can be reached at our website at bakercoulson.com or 503-666-5569. That's bakercoulson.com, 503-666-5569. And remember, at Baker & Coulson, our service is the product our clients remember most.
You're listening to Investing Simplified. Now, back to Bo Caldwell.
Welcome back to Investing Simplified. If you're just now tuning in, thank you for joining us. If you've been listening to us this whole 45 minutes or so, thank you for sticking with us. We did have a question that came in via text about old 401ks or orphan 401ks, but it said, what about pensions, an old, you know, an orphan pension? And similar rules apply to an orphan pension. It depends on what your pension benefit is, right? So you can roll that money over into an IRA if you took a lump sum. You can start taking distributions on that pension based on your pension year. A lot of times, especially with like the Boeing pension or some other companies around here that have really good pension plans, PERS, you got to look at those pensions and say, well, that's a pretty darn good annuity payment, right? That's a pretty darn good guaranteed rate of return that you can get. And a lot of times it has a spousal benefit on there, whether that's a 50% survivorship benefit or sometimes 100% option. So you can make sure that you and your spouse have a guaranteed income for the rest of your life. But sometimes it's not great. And sometimes it's just a small amount. And so it may make a lot of difference to you to take that lump sum and take that 30 grand and roll it into your IRA rather than taking the $150 a month for the rest of your life, conceivably. So everybody's situation is different, but if you have an old pension plan out there, and whether that's a cash balance plan or an actual pension, but pension plans are kind of going the way of the dodo bird. But you know, if it's something that's out there and you'd like us to analyze for you, give us a call, 503-253-3000. I'm happy to go over the different options and break it down so that you can make an informed decision on what's going to be best for your family. So Jim has a question about the Oregon 529. Hello, Jim.
Hello. Yeah, I had a question. There was supposedly some changes in the Oregon 529 plan about how much you can deduct starting mm-hmm. next year, but there was also something I'm unclear about. If you prepay or put money in this year at a higher amount, then you can deduct them for the next 2 or 3 years at the current higher rate. I don't know if you could clarify that for me.
Well, you just served me up a nice softball there. This is actually some great question. Very good changes, and I was actually going to have a segment shortly and another show on this, but let's cover that real quick. Basically, what's happening is the current rules, which are changing in Oregon, you still have the federal benefits, and we won't talk about those, about taking tax-free distributions mm-hmm. for mm-hmm. qualified education expenses. This is for the subtraction or the write-off on your Oregon tax return for contributing to an Oregon-only 529 plan or a plan that's in the Oregon 529 network. And in general, the current rules, which are going to change at in about, 4 days? Today? Anyway,
right, yeah. 11:59 p.m. December 31st.
Exactly. Right. Thank you. Basically, it's a subtraction that you get on your Oregon tax return for contributing, and I'll just go with the married couple amount, which is somewhere around $4,500.
Is it 46?
Yeah, 4,600, 4,500 a year. And the current rules state that you can stack those contributions. You can, if you were to do, say, $10,000 into the 529 this year, you would get to subtract only the maximum of $4,500. The difference gets carried over up to 4 years. So if you were to make a contribution for roughly
18,000.
Exactly, I was going to say 17 something, but $18,000, you would have a subtraction. You could take the maximum amount this year and then the additional for 4 more years. And that's allowed and that's locked in and that won't change and you can still do that. Starting in 2020, it's going away from a subtraction and any contributions made 1/1/2020 and forward will qualify for an Oregon tax credit. And it's a revised amount. I believe it's $300 maximum credit,
I think you're right. And up to $300, and you have to contribute $3,000, and it's based on income, isn't it?
Yes, $3,000 single, $6,000. You'd have to do $6,000 as a married couple, and you'd get the $300 credit. Not as favorable as potentially as the subtraction, but that is the new program going forward. And you can do both. You can front load the 529 this year before the end of the year, up to 5 years. And you'd get those deductions for 5 more years, and you could make a 2020 contribution and get the credit.
So you could do 5 years at $4,500.
It's roughly
this year.
We'd have to look up the exact amount, but it's roughly $4,500. Yep. You could put more in. The most you can deduct is about $4,500 for a married couple.
Right. So if you did the 5 times of 45, then that's the max you could do to try to help you out in the future.
Right.
That's right. It's $4,865.
Oh, okay.
$48.65 for a married couple, $24.35 for a single person.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. So $48.65 times five.
I'm sorry. And do you have to do that by the end of this year?
You do.
Previously,
right.
You could
that's
do
what,
it by April
15th. I was asking. You're kind of up against the clock.
Yes, and that's a very key point. Is you used to be able to do until April 15th the contribution for the prior year. With this change of rules, they have locked in December 31st,
okay.
And so it has to be done by December 31st to get the deduction.
Okay, and overall that would be better than the new plan going ahead with the tax credit.
Yeah. I believe so.
Yeah, it's a higher percentage. You know, if you're in the 9%, because you get a deduction off your taxes, right? So ostensibly you're saving $400 and something on your taxes if you're in the 9% bracket, you know, 9.9, if you're in the 10% bracket, 9.9 with Oregon with the full deduction, and the credit only gets you $300. Right. Does that make sense? So you could conceivably get a higher reduction in taxes you could actually double dip, like Kevin was saying, if you quintupled your contribution for this year, did the 5 times contribution, and then in January or sometime in 2020 did the other contribution for that credit, you'd get the full deduction plus the $300 credit next year.
Oh, I got you.
Does that make sense?
Great.
So that's what you're talking about with the double dipping, and then you could do that over the next 5 years and double up.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's a great question, Jim.
Okay, you bet.
Absolutely. Very good. And we're just talking generally on the credit. It's actually all dependent on your current income,
right.
But it is, and the higher your income, the more you have to contribute to get the $300 maximum credit. For example, if you make less than $30,000, you can contribute $300 and you'll get a $300 credit.
Ooh, so it's a way better deduction if your income is lower.
Exactly right. And that was always the knock on 529 plans, is that it kind of benefited the rich, the wealthy, because they had the excess money to be able to dump into these plans, and then they're the ones who got the tax deduction. And so now by doing the credit and phasing it in at different income levels. Yeah.
So from what I understand what you're saying, and this is what I read too, so it's based on your income. The lower your income, the less money you have to contribute to get the credit.
Exactly
so
right.
The credit amount's the same. It's the maximum credit, but it depends on how much you have to contribute to get that credit, and that's all income based.
That's right. If you have over $250,000 of adjusted gross income, then you have to contribute $6,000 or more to get the $300 credit.
Yeah. So it's much less. It's only a 5%, deduction ostensibly, right, versus the 10% now if you're in that bigger bracket. So that makes a lot of sense that they're moving it down to lower income. So that was really good questions. Thank you for listening today. Thank you for your questions. Kevin, if people have questions about that 529 plan in the next couple of days, or if they have just general tax questions or would like to get started with you, how do they get a hold of you?
Yeah, we are at baker-colson.com. Our phone number is 503-666-5569.
And if you'd like to sit down with me, east side or west side of Portland, we have offices on both sides of town. We can meet in Vancouver as well. If you have a question about your portfolio, about your investment planning, about your retirement planning, you'd like just a free complimentary, no obligation review, we're happy to do that for you. 503-253-3000, or visit us on the web at pfgwm.com. Thank you so much for listening today. We've been Investing Simplified. I'd like to say, if you're out on your bike tonight, do wear white, all that stuff. But Happy New Year. God bless y'all. Here's to another great decade. Well,
navigating through today's financial investment world can seem pretty scary. Now, here's the good news. Chuck Price, president of Price Financial Group Wealth Management, introduces a new revolutionary concept that will change how you invest now and in the future. It's called Asset Lock. Asset Lock monitors your investment accounts 24/7, 365 and alerts you when action needs to be taken. And now, Chuck Price offers Asset Lock. At Price Financial Group Wealth Management, we believe all our clients deserve to have Asset Lock monitoring their accounts. So call Chuck today or online at pfgwm.com and learn how you could get Asset Lock on your accounts today for free. Price Financial Group Wealth Management, because the smart investor knows what you don't know can hurt you.
Investing Simplified.
Call 503-253-3000. That's 503-253-3000.
You can listen to past shows of Investing Simplified or sign up for our free newsletter at www.pfgwm.com. This show is brought to you by Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated, a registered investment advisor firm located at 555 Southeast 99th Avenue, Suite 103, Portland, Oregon, 97216, 503-253-3000 or 877-50-PRICE. Investing Simplified is a registered trademark owned by Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated.